free ball from CG43. They're in front.
This is flat out ridiculous.
From a beautiful left hand, in and out finish, the old fashioned way.
Newell gets to the basket with one to come. From there again. You have got to be kidding me. Tyson Stiff.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the NBL Pocket Podcast. Recording this on Wednesday, the 28th of April. Normally, we do it on a Tuesday, but times have changed. No Andrew today. Can't make it. He's in Perth, and with the lockdown, there's a lot going on. So it's just me today. Also, I'm on a juice cleanse. So if I seem irritable, you know why. I haven't eaten in a couple of days. It's ridiculous. I don't know why I did this thing, but juice. What are we going to talk about today? A lot of things. The new signing of the 36ers, Kei Soto. Josh Giddey to the NBA. Got a couple of questions on Patreon or topics we're going to talk about from there. A correction to last year's attendances that I put out last episode. Casper Ware, Sean Bruce, Southeast Melbourne Phoenix. Venky Joyce, going to talk about Venky. And a few other things, and then we'll go from there. But let's start with the big kid from the Philippines. Kei Soto, 7'2", signed with the Adelaide 36ers. I've only seen the same footage that everyone else has seen. Seems to have nice vision and relatively tough. You know, looks as though he likes to finish hard at the rim. I think Daniel Johnson, his future teammate, is probably it's a bit of a ridiculous comparison, but he's Daniel Johnson without any of the output in a professional league, I'd say, is the way you're looking at. Problem is, he probably won't learn a damn thing from Daniel Johnson because Daniel Johnson has no social skills. I think he might be afraid to talk, Daniel Johnson. But so that probably will be interesting to see. But the problem with this kid is, despite finishing hard at the rim, he seems to move at a glacial pace and is pretty weak in the upper body. I'd worry about his strength, but I'm even more worried about him keeping up with and getting up and down the floor with the likes of a Ben Moore. You know, those types of centers that are pretty popular in the NBL nowadays. But this seems to be the business strategy of the Adelaide 36ers going forward. Sort of prostitute a roster spot for a project. Get the NBL to pay for it. Do it on the NBL Nexstar's dime. And then collect the buyout money. So, clever. Clever from the 36ers. Second year in a row they've done that. Giddey was a bit more high performance this year. But certainly the kid looks pretty raw, but kind of fun at the same time. Has a little bit of a jump shot. Be very interested to see how he goes, and I wish him all the best. And bring in that Filipino audience. I'm amazed teams, or not so much the NBL, but teams themselves have either shied away from doing that or haven't had the foresight to do that. Huge error in judgment. But they've done it now, so good luck to the kid. We'll see him next year. Moving on, Giddey. Giddey's off to the NBA. Who would have thought it? Declared for the draft, anyway. Whether he gets taken in the lottery or the first round remains to be seen. I guess the nearest comparison is LaMelo Ball. And you look at here, I put up the stats on Twitter today. I've had very similar stats. Josh Giddey, 11 points a game, 7 assists, 7 rebounds. His splits, percentage splits, I mean, 41, 32, 65, 10 wins, 23 losses. 9 double-doubles, 1 triple-double. LaMelo Ball, 17 points per game, 7 assists, 7.5 rebounds, 38, 25, 72. So that looks really bad on paper. 25 from the outside. Whew. 3 wins, 9 losses, 2 double-doubles, 2 triple-doubles for LaMelo Ball. So if you put any stock in triple-doubles, which you probably shouldn't, because I think all of LaMelo Ball triple-doubles, I think one of them came in a win. I want to say that overtime win or late-game win against Cairns, whereas Giddey's obviously came in what was a very routine loss the other night. But anywho, but look at those splits. 41% from the field from Giddey, 38 for Ball, pretty similar. 25, 32 from the outside. Giddey again takes it, but not by a lot. And then the free throws, that's interesting though. Like, you would have thought the better shooter would be better from the line, but LaMelo Ball was better. And you know, Ball's had, I didn't think LaMelo Ball was going to be as good as he was in the NBA. He's put up some nice stats and played pretty well. And you look at it though, the contribution these guys have to winning early on, anyway, it's probably been unfair to ask this of a rookie, but the commitment to winning. I think Giddey's won 10 wins in the NBL, 10-13, whereas LaMelo Ball had a horrible 3-9. But I mean, the team that LaMelo Ball had was not even a tenth of what Giddey's played with. I mean, Giddey's played with Johnson, Daniel Johnson, who's a, you know, a NBL first team, second teamer perennially for the last decade, you know, walking 20 points, not hard to get five assists to that guy. And then, you know, decent imports. I mean, Crocker's an upgrade on what Josh Boone was. I think even Connor Henry's an upgrade on Matt Flynn, who, bless his socks, he had no idea what the fuck he was doing. But and then Brooks was good for Ball, but didn't hang around for very long. And then all those other imports there were terrible. And that team was, you know, the Hawks, I mean, was going down the toilet, if not to prison. I heard that it's in pretty dodgy criminal stuff. So in that sort of vacuum, no wonder that team lost. They were atrocious. Whereas Giddey's had a bit better team. But you look at LaMelo Ball, went over to the NBA with him. They've had 20 wins, 21 losses, so 49% win tally. Without him, they're 10-11. So an identical win-loss percentage. I haven't looked at who they've played either side. You know, that obviously depends in the NBA. But essentially, LaMelo Ball's influence on winning by that stat, not a huge difference. But, you know, maintaining a team's win percentage when you go in the game, that's something to be said for the kids. So it's not all bad. But going back to Giddey, I put out a poll on Twitter. Will we see him again in the NBL this season? 57% of the people on Twitter said yes. Now, that poll's up for until their next game at 8 o'clock in a couple of days, so that may change. I don't think we see him. Maybe he plays one more game. I don't know why I say that, but no, I don't think we see him again because I think that slip on the decal. Oh, any snipers? No, haven't been shot down yet. Nope, you can say that. That slip on the decal, I think that was enough for him and his agent, Daniel Moldovan, to pull the pin on him. I think, yeah. I'd say those Raptors scouts came to that game and said, yeah, we're going to take him at 8th. He's projected at 13th, but they have the 8th pick. So maybe they've said, yeah, we're going to take him ahead of time. And with that handshake under the table, it's like, you know, pull the pin. And now the work in improving his draft stock isn't done on the floor. It's done in the rat ways of the NBA business, which is, you know, floating ideas that, the Raptors are going to take him at 8. You better get him at 7 if you want him. Oh, they're going to take him at 7. Better get him. It becomes an auction at this point. And what's forbidding is a nice, nice, firm, 19-year-old flesh for the NBA and the hoop scouts and the hoops, so on and so forth. So good luck to them. As I said before, we got a couple of Patreon questions. Our first one is from Steve. 2 seconds. Yes, Steve. Good to hear you guys back after a break. Question statement, can you see the Breakers winning a championship with Ty Webster at the helm? I'm assuming he'll be there for the next 3 to 5 years. I don't know if that's a safe assumption. He seems to be a bad team, good stats guy, and appears to be enjoying being injured a little too much. Thoughts? And that's from Steve. And Steve goes on. I remember a game earlier this year against Cairns in Cairns where New Zealand were playing rubbish and they benched the starting five and made a comeback. Gaze was commenting and said that the body language from the Websters was poor while the subs got them back in the game. Eating nachos on the bench during the game a few weeks ago, injured. New Zealand are stuck, as it would look. Poor form to move on for favourite son. To try to keep as many New Zealand players as possible. More of a vent than a question or comment, but I enjoyed it from Steve. Thank you. I mean, I think, Steve, your answer's on the floor, isn't it? Last season, the Breakers were poor with Corey Webster, and then he left for China, and the team got better with Hobson, and pretty much the same team. And then this season they looked bad with Ty Webster, and now they look a bit better with McDowell White. And last night they had that loss to Cairns, that freak loss where Venky got the block at the buzzer. We'll talk about that some more. But they got, you know, they had that loss when Webster played very poorly. And now, then he went to the bench and they won the other night, I believe. So, I mean, there's your on-off. That's for me anyway. So, do I see them winning a championship under those circumstances with those guys? Probably not. Probably not. And when I say probably not, I mean no. So, that's how I see that one. We've got more Patreon questions. And the Patreons come first. They are the lifeblood of this thing. Nick White. What is the pathway to proper financial stability for the NBL? This is a tough one from Nick. Really nuanced question. I don't know a heck of a lot about how the NBL makes or loses its money. From the articles I've read, it seems to do more of the latter, lose money. But it's really a two-pronged question, this one, because there's a big difference between the NBL as a league making money and then the clubs making money. The two are kind of separate entities. They are co-joint, but how they make money is different. So I don't really know how the NBL makes its money. They obviously charge the teams a licensing fee at the start of the year, which the teams all pay, and they collect that money. Whereas the clubs seem to make money off their attendances, which this season have been really poor. And a correction to last week's podcast, those averages I gave out the totals and I divided them by 28 for the home attendances. But obviously, NBL teams don't play 28 home games last season. They played 14, so double those numbers. So that was the issue there. But I'll come back to those attendances. But on this question, you know, so they have this licensing fee. My understanding is the NBL collects, the league itself collects a lot of money off the betting, and there is a bit of conflict between the clubs and the league as to what proportion that should be in. The clubs think they should get more of it. I think the league may get damn near all that money, as they do with the merchandising as well. So you got merchandising, they're making money. The league is making money. Betting, the NBL's making money. As clubs, I guess you're making your money off attendances and membership. And maybe if you've got local sponsorships or local TV deals. But you know what's interesting is I've crisscrossed the country in the last couple of days and weeks. I've been in Melbourne and Perth and also this in Sydney. And in Melbourne, the news will talk about Melbourne United and South East Melbourne and interview the coach. And in Perth, they'll certainly interview Trevor Gleeson. I think they've got a good relationship with Channel 10, with Lockie Reed and Channel 10. Whereas here in Sydney, the Kings don't make the news. They don't have that relationship with a newsbreaker or a media partner. So as far as your question, what is the pathway to proper financial stability? One thing that's important to note is that you have to think of the NBL in different terms, because the NBL is a privately owned business or company, and it is owned by Larry Kesselman, and therefore it sits within a number of businesses that he owns. So being the NBL profitable isn't really the question, the greater question one could ask. You could sort of say, how does Larry Kesselman use the NBL within his other businesses to kind of play off and make money between the lot of them? So it may work in his favor to spend on the NBL and get into a lower tax bracket. I don't know enough about tax, but you know what I mean? You could see the NBL as a piece on his chessboard to his private equity, because that's what it is. The NBL is not owned by the government. It's not a public company. It's owned by one guy, and he can do whatever he wants with it in the scheme of how he wants to make money for himself. So, and that might sound sort of manipulative or like a criticism. That's not a criticism at all. It's Larry Kesselman or Kesselman business entities to do with what they wish. So when people kind of are like, oh, the NBL should do this and Larry Kesselman doesn't want to do it because he's selfish or a bad guy or stubborn, the way I look at it would be the same as if you walked into a bakery that you don't own, you just go in a couple of times and you go, you know what, I really think you should start selling pizza instead. And the bakery then turning around and you're saying, what? Get out of my business immediately. You know, it's their private thing. They can do what they want with it and, you know, ride with whatever tide they sort of create for themselves. So I do find that really peculiar when people are like, oh, the NBL should do this. It's kind of not your place. But it's okay to suggest things, but then get offended when they're not taken on board. It's like go into any business in the world that you have no stake in, no horse in the race, and give your opinion about how they should spend their money and just see the reaction you get. I think the NBL and Larry Kesselman are pretty good about taking on suggestions. So that's a very interesting, very important thing to note. I think for the clubs, lowering staff wages. If you look at any business, the number one thing they do to increase their bottom line is fire people or cut down wages. And that's not a popular answer to that question. And certainly the players and the agents and the players union would not be too happy. But here's what I'd say to clubs in the league. Type into Twitter the letters G for garbage, A for apple, A for airplane, and press enter. And you'll come up with the GAA's official Twitter account, or at least you should. I haven't come up with it. Where is it? Official GAA. The GAA is the Gaelic Athletic Association of Ireland, and it has all 32 counties competing in that competition. It has 412,000, almost 413,000 Twitter followers. To put that in perspective, the NBL has... you can never bring these things up when you want to, I swear to God. The NBL has 66. So what was the discrepancy there? A couple of hundred thousand? To put that in even greater context, let's look at the AFL's number of Twitter followers. Now, this is just one metric of how popular the leagues are. Okay, the AFL's got 741,000. But the AFL exists in a much larger country in Australia. I think Ireland has a population of about 5 million or so, whereas Australia's something 20-some million, maybe way off there. But and the thing about the GAA is it's hugely popular, and for its grand final, both the hurling, camogie, and Gaelic football, they have 70, almost 100,000 people packed into Croke Park in Dublin. You'd never, maybe you haven't heard of it. But the other thing about it is it's all amateur. So it doesn't pay its players anything. And often you'll hear in its telecast things like, oh, it's out to the man on the wing, the hardware store owner from County Sligo with the ball. And that's the thing, they don't get paid to play at all. Not officially anyway, maybe under the table. In fact, likely under the table. But it's minimal. So my greater question, I guess, to Nick and the world is basketball a pay-for-play sport in Australia? Or should it return to its amateur status like it did under the sort of Lindsay Gaze era? Obviously, the talent would take a huge hit unless you sort of retain imports. I don't know how you do that, but it's an option. It's a thought. And how would the league change? It's probably not even possible at this point. You can't undo the commercialism of the NBL, but just putting it out there, the idea that not paying your players is outrageous. Well, one of the biggest sporting leagues in the world does it, and they do just fine. And they have more of a community mindset with the profits that they do make, because they do sell tickets for the GAA. That's in answer to Nick. I hope that's answered somewhat of your question. And the correction to the attendance numbers. So last week on the podcast, any numbers double it. So really the attendances are down by about half. And even the Perth Wildcats, for example, they averaged 13,000 last year. I said they averaged 6.5, double it, 13,000. Well, obviously the last game they only had about 5,000, but that was due to COVID, so let's push that to one side. But the game before that, they had about 11,000, and that was on a weekend. It was against Illawarra. Good game, no excuses. They're down 2,000 tickets. Now, maybe I'm being a little bit unfair, but I haven't got the averages, so I'm just going to take that one game and say, well, if it's down from the average, right? That's 2,000 tickets. Tickets are on average, what, about $100? Again, could be more, could be less. But if they're down 2,000 times 100, that means that game alone, they lost $200,000 compared on a game of last year. 200,000. That's one player's whole salary for the season that they lost in one game. Imagine doing that. Imagine if it's down just 1,000 every game. You know, 100,000 gone, 100,000 gone, bang, bang, bang. So you look at what's going on. You know, the attendances in the NBL are dire. And that's the Wildcats, who maintain 10,000 plus. Look what's happening in Southeast Melbourne and with United. It is, whew, yikes. You know, some people be singing for their supper and struggling to keep the lights on. To me, it's that brutal. I mean, Southeast Melbourne versus Sydney had 1,268 people at that game paid to pay to go to it. This podcast had more listens last week than that game had attendances. Just think about how much production goes into putting that game on for that many viewers, times by $100 a ticket, let's say. That's the amount of money that's coming from that game. They got to pay the rent on the building, the advertisements, the players, the back staff, the refs, how much the NBL chips into that, how much the club plays, I don't know. Either way, it ain't good. Let's jump over to something else, something positive. Casper Ware had the 40-point game, but I think his game against that ground-out win against Illawarra was more indicative of how well he's played this season. First thing I've got about Casper Ware is durability. When was the last time this guy missed a game? Everybody in the NBL, these players are missing games like crazy. Daniel Johnson and Casper Ware are the most reliable, but the difference is Daniel Johnson doesn't play any defense. Casper Ware does, and he still remains durable, and he scores. Has the off game every now and again, but Man, he's got poise, Casper Ware. He's the anti-Jerome Randall. No empty stats with this guy. You know, every good stat he does counts towards winning. When he plays poorly, they normally lose. But last year, I was critical of Will Weaver, as were a few other people, very few other people. Will Weaver cast a spell on this league and its fans. But let's look at Casper Ware. NBL 20 against NBL 21. His minutes are up slightly, 2 minutes more. His points are up, his assists are up, his turnovers only fractionally up despite playing more minutes. His field goal percentages, have a listen to this. NBL 20 last season, 34% from the field. NBL 21 this season, 45%. It's up 9, nearly GST improvement. 3-point percentage, 28% last season, 36% this year. 8% increase, let's call that a tenner as well. He goes from being abysmal to being league average. His three-point attempts, this is where Weaver's impact has come down. Three-point attempts, 9 down to 7. Doesn't sound like a lot, but that's 2 less every game. Over the course of this season, that's going to be some 70 shots. Am I being rude in saying that Will Weaver nearly sunk this guy's career with his sort of weird science-esque rotations and cast up the three-point attempts at any opportunity? I don't think I'm doing a stretch by asking that. And I think United really screwed the pooch by not paying Casper Ware the sort of basketball industry standard 10% raise for making the finals that year. They lost to Perth, NBL 19. They should have paid him that extra money. And then they could potentially be looking at a guy who's been there for 5 years, is a great player, and could be naturalized. I think Casper Ware arrived in the same season as Cotton. I don't know if Casper keeps a wife. That's a horrible way to phrase that. But I don't know if he has a wife or a girlfriend who's Australian, which Bryce Cotton obviously does, which helps his court case. But nonetheless, guy's worked in the country for 5 years. You should be looking at PR or naturalization, whichever one it might be, or citizenship. I think the Kings are making the four. And the simple reason is they have the second best import duo in the NBL, behind the Perth Wildcats, of course. And that's good enough for top four. Cairns are out of the running. New Zealand left their run too late. Southeast Melbourne, Kiefer Sykes has just been injured for so long. And I go back to that durability question with Casper Ware. How many guys have missed time this year? Perth guys, you know, the ones that matter in Perth don't miss any time. But, you know, Humphreys has missed 3/4 of the season. Giddy missed a little bit of time. Kiefer Sykes has been out. Brokoff is now hurt. You know, all these guys. It's been an absolute... look at the Kings. DJ Vasiljevic, none of these guys can play the whole year. Casper Ware, he's there. He's always there. You get bang for your buck with Casper Ware. But here's why I say they're making the four. DJ Vasiljevic, huge loss. They needed his scoring. However, was he a distraction from the true nature of this Kings team? And the true nature of this Kings team, to me, is a grind you down, absolute bore on the floor, a snooze fest, Wildcat knockoff. That's what this team is. They're a Wildcat knockoff. They play defense like the Wildcats. They even have a former coach of the Wildcats. They hate the Wildcats. It's the ultimate master and apprentice situation with these two teams. Didi Luzad, everyone's like, oh, he's such a big loss. I don't see Didi as a loss at all. He wasn't playing well. He didn't score, which they needed. His defense was okay, but if you can't defend against Bryce Cotton, if you're a wing defender and you get torched by Bryce Cotton, you're not helping them in the finals when they make it. Maybe helps them get there a little bit, but I'm not hitting the red button with the departure of Didi Luzada. We can find someone else who can shoot sub 30% from the three-point line. And then Angus Glover, decent player, but he doesn't move the needle. It's not like, oh, Angus Glover's out, we're done. Throw in the towel. No, man, you still got Casper Ware, you still got Jarrell Martin, you still got Newley. Jordan Hunter's taken a step up. I guess the greater question is, has Casper Ware proved the theory that the import guard is a need in the NBL? I guess the counter to that argument is the fact that the very team he left, Melbourne, are top of the ladder, and they don't have an import. I'm going to go ahead and say they just don't have an import full stop. They've got Hobson. He's not an import guard. He's not playing. They've proved the opposite. But they've had a schedule that, if you were to quantify it, has been softer than Telk. It has been on the Scoville scale. No, what's the hardness scale? It's not Scoville. Something else. But they have had a schedule softer than Telk. They haven't traveled outside of Lygon Street, I think that's in Melbourne, to play their games. It's been outrageous. I know why that is, the cup, blah, 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 but you can't deny the facts. They've barely left home and home teams winning this league. So that's kind of, so you know, that's my answer to that question. I think you do need an import guard, especially the way the market is with Europe. You can get real talent out of that guard spot from an international import. Moving on, but sticking with Sydney, Sean Bruce. So in that game that Sydney beat Illawarra 75-79 in overtime, that's a total of 154 points in just over 45 minutes. That is so little scoring. This game was, it was disgusting. It was a horrible game of basketball to watch. If an alien came down from outer space and that was their first introduction to basketball, who would be a fan of the sport and certainly not the league and those two teams? Terrible. Sean Bruce, listen to this stat line. 35 minutes, 3 points, 1 of 10, 3 turnovers, 4 fouls. I hate to rag on Sean Bruce, but Sean Bruce is 44th in minutes per game, yet 86th of 99 in PER. And you say, oh, good defender, is he? I see a player who's kind of dirty. I've always thought Sean Bruce is a little dirty. If you got a problem with that, you can text me and I'll find the footage of, even in the last play of this game, had a play down the stretch, instead of trying to make a play on offense, used the fend off to try and get an unfair advantage and got called for it. But yeah, I don't know what to say. And why I sort of pick on Sean Bruce is every NBL team, due to the three import down to two restriction, has these holes not only in their lineup or their roster, but their starting lineup. Every team's got one, and you can name them. And bless all their socks, but you know, in Perth, it's Jared Bairstow. In Adelaide, it's Pinder. In Cairns, it's their wing depth. I don't know. You take your pick. In Sydney, it's Bruce. In Illawarra, it's... flip. Take your pick again. Probably Adele. In Melbourne, it's Sam McDaniel. In Southeast Melbourne, it's Tarangi. You know, these guys are everywhere, and it's like people have to pay to watch this product. Get out of here. But staying with sort of low PER and gaps in play, Scotty Hobson, what is going on out there? Can anybody tell me? I said this before about Sean Bruce being, what, 86th in PER in the league. Scotty Hobson is 92nd out of 99 players. And my question, I guess, is can United win the title with Hobson playing 15 minutes, which is the... he was the 8th highest minute getter against that game against Adelaide. He went 0-6 in the field. He's starting behind Sam McDaniel. McDaniel went 1-7. And that's where I've got the point here. Every team has a dead spot and it's starting 5. But Melbourne United are massacring this guy's career. I still think Hobson's a good player. I still think he's not only a good player, I think he's a star player. If Cairns had him, they'd be a lot better. If Perth had him, they'd be better. If Adelaide have him, they might be in the top 5, top 6. I think they might be in the top 6, but they'd be in the top 4 potentially. If South East Melbourne killed for him. If you're going to use him right, that guy's a stud star NBL second teamer minimum. And this guy can't get on the floor. Is he hurt? I don't think so. You can ask yourself about this Melbourne team, this United team. What is this team? The locals are great, but it's come at the expense of the imports. Sam McDaniel starting over Hobson. My thing to Dean Vickham is you can't make that work. You can't find a spot for Hobson to make it work. And, you know, we had this last year where Trimble and Long chewed up, spat out. And then those two took a stand late in the year and kind of started to play well, nearly dragged that team past Sydney, who were, you know, top of the table. And yet we see it with Dunham with Hobson. If I was Hobson's agent, or even the man himself, I'd be looking at going elsewhere. It's not working. And yes, they're winning, but are they going to get by Perth with Scotty Hobson going 0-6 from the field, playing 15 minutes? Good luck. And you know, we talk about depth with that team, and I like them. They're good. But I'd rather have punch than depth. And what I mean by that is I think the depth on United's overrated. They've got a good starting lineup. Landau's great. McCarron's amazing. Golding's pretty good. And then who plays four for this team? Dave Barlow? And then Sam McDaniel's in the starting lineup? J Jack White's gone. Udeh Barber is punch. Udeh Barber is one guy who, okay, if you're in a five-game series, he'll win you one. Still got to get two more. I think the word you're looking for rather than bench depth is punch, and I don't think they have punch. Especially with Hobson. One of six. Come on, let's grow up. Southeast Melbourne. Let's jump over to them. They had a couple of, I think they had a 20-point loss or something. Glidden and Taurangi. They had that bad loss to, I want to say, was it Sydney? Was that the game? Yeah, at home. Glidden didn't do anything for three quarters and then padded his stats in the fourth. Taurangi was atrocious. Had a better game against Cairns, but I think you could roll out five members from a residence, old folk home, and they'd play pretty well against Cairns, especially on a back-to-back, second of a back-to-back. I don't particularly want to watch either of those two guys, Glidden and Taurangi, play basketball for more than 18 minutes and certainly not simultaneously ever. I'm pulling the pin on Ruben Taurangi. I'm sorry. We're through the year. You've had your chances. You've had a team and a coach really back you in, and I haven't seen it. However, this team's going to make the four. Let's just, if I could just make that, because Black Cockatoos, will you shut up? Look at this team when healthy. Sykes, Adnam, Creek, Brokoff, Moore, Wetzel. That's enough. That is enough to get you in the top four. Sykes can't come back soon enough. Is it Liafa or Adnam who takes that step back? I say Liafa. And there's your what, six. And that's a crunch time five and six that really works. Don't play a lot of D in the front court. But that's a team that should get you to the top four. And a word on Mitch Creek. This is an awkward conversation to have. A lot of people take this issue very, very to heart, as they should. But, you know, the charges have been dropped. He played amazingly throughout the stretch. And I want to put the sort of charges to the side. Obviously had a lot in his plate in the last couple of weeks and has, you know, really burrowed through and continued to play and been one of the few consistent performers for this team. You know, look at Kobe Bryant. You know, Kobe Bryant was on trial for rape and sexual assault before he revamped his image and amazingly became a global media darling. And, you know, Creek is obviously having a similar stretch, and you have to commend his fortitude. Sadly, despite the charges being dropped, mud still sticks. Rightly or wrongly, this will follow Creek forever. People still want a pound of flesh from Mitch Creek. I don't. I haven't heard the particulars. If I was in Melbourne, I would have gone to the case if I had free time and listened and hopefully watched the video that exonerated him ultimately. Every case is different, whether it's speeding fines or a case of this importance. You have to measure it on your own merits, and really have to have the conversation about what is redemption in the sporting culture and the culture of Australia at large, really. It's a tough one. But I'm glad to watch Mitch Creek play basketball and everything else thereafter. I'm happy to kind of play by ear. But Southeast Melbourne, work it out. So see Glidden here played 31 minutes, Taurangi 22. 20 for Glidden and in the low teens for Taurangi, if at all. Jim, moving on. Venki Joyce. This is a guy I've campaigned about for a while. And the big reason is I like players who provide one skill at an elite level. And Venki Joyce has got a big, solid frame, and he gives athleticism that is beyond the average NBL big. It is beyond the average. And you saw it in that first game where he missed those two free throws, then committed the bad foul on Corey Webster. And it looked like Venki was going to lose that game, and then came back and swatted the shit out of Corey Webster. And it was a great story. If I'd worked in NBL media, I might have clipped it up to show the missed free throws, the burgers, the laughing, and then the foul, and then there was yammer, there was chat between him and Webster, and then Webster comes in, boom, swat, Dufamo hits that massive three. That was a great game. Cairns went up and then blew it because they've got little talent left on the floor without Oliver back. But back to Venki, he provides athleticism that is beyond most players in the NBL. I think he's a really good player. And yeah, I like it. And I think Venki kind of proved a point on that play. Athleticism wins out on occasion, if not most of the time. You know, Webster put that ball up there thinking no NBL big can go up and get that. And Venki just went, fuck you. And it was a fun game, fun finish to watch, I'll say that much. Right, where are we at? Just over 30 minutes. You got to think that's pretty good. Normally I'd speak for 30, Andrew would speak for 30, and we're out of here. And that's exactly what we're going to do. We're done. Thanks very much for listening, everyone. I should have probably done this at the top of the program, but marvelous. I've got 3 copies left now. I'd love to move them all and then report back to Body that all have been sold. So again, if you're after a handbook of the league and a really good historical document about where the league was when it started, even just before that, and then where we are now and some of the cool fancy players that have been here in the past, really good read for that purpose. Patreon. If you liked what you heard, get in touch with me on Patreon and support the show. That really helps. Had a couple of new people jump on this last week. Thank you to them. And if you have questions on the Patreon, gladly, or topics even, happy to answer them. What else do I sell here? Patreon. Booktopia. In the link is the description of Booktopia. If you're looking to buy someone a gift or yourself, cookbook, what have you, Filipino cookbook, use the description. You don't get anything for it, but 10% of your sale goes towards the show. And yeah, that would be handy. Appreciate that. And I really think that's it. Twitter at NBL Pocket Pod. Follow me on there. Why not? Pretty vocal on the Twitter. Facebook and Instagram, a little bit before or after my time. After my time. So I'm not on there so much. But thanks for listening, everyone. This has been Joseph Gore for Perform Sports, and I will see you in the near future. Ciao.